Hi, everyone. I hope you're all well. I've got a fabulous guest today. It's the celebrity hairdresser, Sam McKnight. I've known him for quite a while, and he's worked with some of the most amazing women in the world. So I'm going to get to know him a little bit more along with you. Ah, well, this is lovely, Mr. Sam McKnight. Soon to be MBE. Ooh, congratulations.
Well, you know about that, don't you? You know, you can give me some advice on what to wear, right?
You know, the one piece of advice, don't wear high heels, which you wouldn't.
I'll try not to. I think I stopped wearing those in 1975.
That's right. The guys wore as thicker heels as we did.
Yeah, I used to drive in them. I think I sat my driving test in platform shoes,
Oh, my. Oh, well, what were the big wedges? That's hysterical.
Well, because I've got small feet, so I used to be able to go to Sasha and get them. I'd get the women's ones, but the big chunky wedgy things.
Brilliant. That's absolutely... Well, don't wear them.
Okay, now, I won't get them out.
That was the one thing when I got my little nod. I thought, I'm going to wear flat shoes, so I'm going to wear trousers. So, and I got a lovely text from Stella McCartney, who I've known since she was born, saying, can I dress you? And I said, yeah, but I want a trouser suit. I dress from the feet up.
Well, I will try wearing flat shoes and trousers.
It's a lovely day. Anyway, congratulations.
Thank you.
It's
thank
lovely.
You.
Well deserved. Anyway, this is lovely. So you've... Now, after all these years of being this celebrity hairdresser, have brought out your own brand, correct? Products.
We did. And we started that a few years ago, about 6 years ago.
Uh-huh.
Because about 7 or 8 years ago, it's so long ago now, I was approached by Somerset House. Let me start from the beginning.
Go on then, start at the very beginning.
You know how it is. I don't know if you ever kept all your tear sheets. I kept all my tear sheets boxes that went round every flat or house I ever moved into. And the last move was 11 years ago. And I thought, no, I am not doing this anymore. I can't. These are just, if there's a flood, they're going to get ruined. And it's kind of amazing because I had all the magazines. It was a fantastic collection. And I found a lady called Tori to digitalize everything. You know, so to scan it all, digitalize it and archive it, really. And she worked for Somerset House. Somerset House saw it and thought there would be a great exhibition there. You know, sort of 40 years of fashion pictures, really. Hair pictures, but fashion pictures, really. So we did a book and an exhibition at Somerset House. And after that was, while that was going on, we thought, you know what, now's the time to do a line of hair products because we're so kind of, we've done everything else. Because it's funny. Do I call you Twiggy or Leslie? I don't know what to call you.
Oh, Twiggy.
Twiggy. Yeah. Okay, Twiggy.
The only people my mum and dad called me Leslie. Not many of the family. My stepson, about it. And my sisters, obviously, because that's... But apart from that, no, it's Twiggy all the way.
I watched on Sky that amazing documentary of you when you first started, still living at your mum's.
I was a bubby.
Oh my God, it was so incredible. It was so fantastic. All that lovely old footage and just amazing. It's just incredible. Anyway, having kind of done the exhibition and the book was like, this is your life. You know, I had 22 boards and my house was covered in boards with pictures on it. And to get down from 40,000 images to
40,000.
Three or 400. You know, you go through them, you think, oh, this one's not with us anymore. And what a nice day. I've got a really good memory, luckily. Not for what happened yesterday, for 40 years ago, though, you know. And you remember the nice times you had with people because it's mostly 99% been amazing, nice times, you know. The odd blip gets kind of put to the back of your mind, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think most people in our business are really nice, actually.
They really are.
In over 50 years, I can probably name, which I won't ever, two people who were a pain.
Yeah, yeah. And it's not bad, is it? Yeah. And how amazing, you look at it and you think, oh, my God, what? how amazing that I have met and spent loads of time and had relationships with all these different people from all over the world, all different backgrounds. And so it was a bit like This Is Your Life. And we thought, okay, I kind of feel I want to do new things. As I get older, I'm going to be 68 this year. And as I get older, I want to try new and different things. And this is the time to put my energy into a product line because I had some really good ideas. And we kind of, we started off very, very small after the exhibition, 5 years ago, I think. And we've grown and we've kind of, we've really grown a lot this year because we launched some great shampoos and conditioners and treatments.
Thank you. I've had some samples. Thank you very much.
Oh, lovely.
And they're lovely. We've got some,
do you know what's great for your fringe? We made these hair wipes, which are made from witch hazel, aloe.
Yeah.
And they are totally biodegradable. They're made from tree pulp cellulose and they'll clean. They're fantastic for cleaning your fringe. They're amazing.
Yeah, because often I don't need to wash my whole hair.
Yeah, you just need to wash the front.
I usually put my head in the sink and wash my fringe. So I can use those instead.
They're absolutely brilliant. They're fantastic. And we'd had that idea a few years ago, but we couldn't really do it because they were all made from plastic. But now they're making things from tree pulp and stuff, and it's just, and mushrooms and stuff, and I'm just really loving all that, you know.
That's amazing. And they look, the product looks lovely as well. I love the
Thank
packaging
you.
The
Thank
colors
you. The fragrance is lovely too.
Yeah,
you'll love the
absolutely
fragrance.
Absolutely gorgeous. So you were born in Scotland?
I was born in Scotland. Yeah.
Why haven't you got a Scottish accent?
I left there when I was 18, maybe 19, and I came and I worked in London, and I ended up working at Molton Brown in London in the late 70s, and no one understood what I was saying. And so I had to kind of modify my accent. And then through years of London, then I lived in New York for 18 years on and off.
Did you?
I did, and wow. I saw you on stage with Tommy Tune.
Did you?
In the 80s. Yeah. What was the show called?
My One and Only.
Yes. It was absolutely brilliant. Absolutely incredible.
No, it was great. Great time.
I'm not just saying that. It was amazing.
Well,
because I had no idea you could sing and dance like that. It was amazing. It was incredible. On stage. That is no mean feat on stage as well on Broadway.
8 times a week. It's, I loved it, but it is.
Yeah.
It's hard. Yeah. Ask anyone who, you know, in that profession who,
yeah,
if you film and TV, I mean, they're all have their challenges, but 8 times a week is tough because it becomes your life.
I have a lovely client called Jodie Comer who did
brilliant
last
she's
year.
Wonderful.
She's amazing, Jodie. Did you see her stage thing last year called Prima Facie?
I did.
She's just one woman on stage for nearly 2 hours.
Oh,
and
my God.
It will blow your mind. She's doing Broadway from April. It's going to Broadway. So if you get the chance to see that.
Oh, if we're in New York.
It's fantastic.
I'm a huge fan.
It's amazing. So what were we talking about before I digressed? Yeah, Molton Brown. So I was at Molton Brown. Then I went in New York. So my accent got... I mean, I wouldn't say I regret it now because whatever will be. But when I'm back in Scotland, it's quite strong again.
Does it come out?
Yeah, because I spent a lot of time there over the past few years because my mum was getting older, so I'd go and see her a lot. And we lost her last year before last.
Sorry.
So, no, she was 89. She had a good innings, as they say. And so my accent's kind of weird. I know it's weird, but there's nothing I can do about that now.
So when you were growing up in... Whereabouts in Scotland?
I'm from a little coal mining village called Newcomnock, which is about 50 miles south of Glasgow.
So did you, as a little boy, always think, oh, I want to be a hairdresser? Or?
Oh, God, no. I went to teacher training college when I left school.
Oh, did you?
I did, yeah. I left school kind of having had A-levels and O-levels and all that stuff, and I think when they don't know what to do with you, they send you to teacher training college. well, they did back then. And you know what? I'm from a coal mining community. So to get into a college was really a big thing in the 70s.
I bet,
you know?
Your mum and dad were very proud.
Absolutely, they were. And then 2 years in, I hated it. I just did not like it at all. I thought, what am I going to do? What am I doing? And my friends owned a few hairdressing salons and a a disco and a restaurant, all that kind of stuff. It was that. So they, I used to do odd jobs for them, driving a van and stuff, you know, during the holidays. And then I slowly ended up kind of, I was rubbish at waiting tables. I tried a bit DJing, but that was too much hard work. And I ended up in the hairdressing salon at the weekends. And it very quickly kind of, the buzz in a hairdressing salon is quite amazing. You know, it's quite unlike anything else. You know, it attracts the most eclectic, fantastic, fun-loving, creative group of people that I had ever been in before, you know? And I just loved it. And a year or two later, I'd moved to London and I worked in a few salons and ended up at Molton Brown, which was just the most fantastic place to be in the late 70s.
Well, I'd say for people who don't know, Molton Brown was a big, big salon, wasn't it?
It was, it was. And Michael and Caroline, who owned it, they were the first people really to do organic products. You know, they made them all in their cottage in Wales. And,
really?
I mean, yeah, they did. And we'd use seaweed lotion and stuff, which always used to go off because there was no preservatives in it. It would last 2 or 3 weeks and it started to smell bad. But the products were great. I mean, they did, I think they were so sort of forward thinking. And I mean, to this day, I still see lots of the staff that were there in the 70s. So it kind of, you build great relationships, I think, you know, and you really bond with people in those situations, no? Because it's hard work.
Yeah, it is hard work. Yeah. You're on your feet all day. That's what always amazes me.
Yeah.
You know, your poor back and your legs and your feet, because you're up and, you know. But
my poor back now, I'm paying the price now.
Well, that's, I'm afraid, what happens. Yeah. But I've always thought that hairdressers are also a bit like therapists, because women tell their hairdresser everything.
But also, it works the other way too. It's a two-way street, because we offload too. You know that in the salon as well, but in the dressing room with models, actresses, hair and makeup, you have that hour or two, first thing in the morning, when you're both really... Yeah, you're probably most raw and vulnerable, right?
That's right.
So you're kind of offloading on each other. And to be honest with me, I know it, and this is not in a horrible or negative way, but it almost goes in one ear and out the other. It's a sort of, I'm not carrying it with me, you know, and it's just a kind of really healthy way of unloading your problems first thing in the morning, having a bit of a moan, a bit of a cup of tea, all that stuff, you know.
No, it's true.
It's
actually
really nice. Yeah.
When I do sessions occasionally now, but when we do, and also we laugh.
Yeah.
And it kind of gets
it?
The go.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's true.
You know, I mean, I've got a good sense of humour, I think, but yeah. I think I laugh more when I'm getting ready to do a shoot.
It's true, isn't it? Yeah.
Because you hear stories and you know,
of course,
it's brilliant.
Of course. And you know that the stories that are told in there are not going anywhere else. You know, they're staying in there.
What's
you know,
told in the dressing room stays
exactly,
in the dressing room.
Exactly.
Hi everyone, I hope you're all well. I'm really excited because I am going to be doing my first live show as part of the London Podcast Festival in King's Cross, London on Saturday the 16th of September at 7 p.m. And I have the most wonderful special guest who's going to join me and have a chat and have tea with me. And that is the wonderful, the hilarious, the divine Ben Elton. So if you'd like to come and join us and join in the fun, please go to kingsplace.co.uk and type in Tea with Twiggy to book your tickets. See you there. Bye.
What was the moment when you left Molton Brown and started to do photographs?
Molton Brown, I had been aware of Vogue magazine and Harper's Bazaar, Harper's and Queen it was then, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And I was aware of you. I was aware of the kind of beautiful images that were being published in Vogue, because they had them in my library at school, and I'd always thought they were quite fascinating as images. But when I was, it was the early 70s, it would be Bailey, Norman Parkinson, Helmut Newton. It was that kind of era, Pear, mm-hmm. Avedon. So I'd always been really amazed by these image makers, if mm-hmm. you like. But I had no idea that there was hairdressers on those shoots, because it was really unusual. It wasn't because you guys used to do your own hair and makeup quite a lot, didn't you?
I have to say,
yeah.
When I start, I'm like a decade before you started,
yeah.
really.
Yeah.
Because my career started in '66. I mean, I was like a babe in arms. Obviously, I was I was 16 and very green. But you know, and as you know, Leonard cut my hair.
Yes, absolutely.
So the hair was there. I just had to wash it and dry it.
Yeah.
And we always had to turn up at the shoot. There were no makeup artists.
Yeah.
So all that makeup I did. But you did it at home and you came to the studio for 8:30.
Amazing.
So, but I think by the time you probably got into that, the makeup artists were around, like Barbara Daly, who I...
Barbara was around. Yeah, Barbara was around.
I think she started in late 60s, early 70s, didn't she?
Yeah. But it was a fairly new thing, because I was sort of mid 70s, and this idea, because usually on the shoots they would get a hairdresser from a salon, you know, it would be Leonard, it would be Vidal Sassoon, it would be Malcolm Brown, it would be Michael John, and quite often they wouldn't have a hairdresser on a shoot, the model would do their own hair. And when I started, it was a special thing to go on a shoot. Also, there weren't that many shoots going on, were there, really? It was quite a small...
But when I kind of checked out of the modelling world in the 70s.
Yeah,
I was, you know, doing a stage thing. It was on Broadway, darling. No. But I decided to kind of go the acting, singing, dancing route.
Yeah,
because,
yeah.
you know, it's not like I planned it. It's just you do one thing
of course,
it leads to another thing. And, you know.
But you say that, but it's also about recognizing those opportunities and saying yes, you know. That's what I say to young people trying to get into my industry. I said, just say yes.
Yeah.
If someone asks you to do it, just say yes. Don't say no, because if you start saying no, they go somewhere else. Just say yes.
No, it's true, actually.
Yeah.
The opportunities.
And jump in with both feet. Yeah. So I got sent out from Molton Brown to do a few shoots. And, you know, in at the deep end, one with Vogue with, I think it was Anna Harvey or Sheila Wetton. Remember Sheila Wetton? And I kind of got the bug for photo shoots. But at the time, there weren't many people not working in salons doing photo shoots. They all came from salons. There was a few people who did film and stuff, and they would do hair and makeup. They do both. But I was rubbish. You would not want me touching your face with a makeup brush, that's for sure. And so I just got the bug for that. And in 1980, Michael's running a business. He said, I can't have you all out doing photo shoots all the time. So we're going to kind of put a cap on it. You're going to have to come back in the salon. Well, the bug had bitten me. And I actually left the salon and started doing photo shoots. And everyone saying, oh, my God, you are crazy. How are you going to survive? Well, do you know what? I had a little car and I used to drive around. I did about 20 clients and cut their hair. And I did one photo shoot a week, which built up over a few years into a career. Because it was about being there at the beginning of something. And I kind of thought, you know what? I'm going to take a risk. And once you've learned a skill, I thought, oh, I can always go back in the salon if it doesn't work out.
I say you could, and also, like you just said, you've got to sometimes have a leap of faith and do it.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, I mean,
when
my opportunity came to do that Broadway show you're talking about, I mean, I was terrified. I'd never done anything like that before. I mean, I'd done a record, I'd done a TV show, I'd sung and danced a bit, but to do it 8 times a week on Broadway, that's scary.
Amazing.
But if I'd have said no... If I'd have said no, look what I'd have missed. I mean, it was amazing.
So did you do The Boyfriend before the stage show or after? The Boyfriend was before.
Yeah, The Boyfriend was before. That was 19... We shot it in 69, 70.
Right, okay.
And that...
I mean, what a brilliant film.
It's mad.
I mean, amazing.
But he changed my life and career, because I was only 20 when I stopped modelling.
Amazing.
I mean, you know, most often... people don't start till then, do they? But my life is has been weird. But again, it's taking the chance. When I did The Boyfriend, I was nervous, but I had Ken behind me. I think if you've got somebody who believes in you, it gives you a lot of courage. Because you want to please them and you want it to, be okay for them.
Yeah, I think at the beginning of my career, that very beginning when I started doing photo shoots, I had the wonderful Anna Harvey from Vogue and Liz Tilbaris. And Liz had just sort of started being the fashion editor. So those two championed me at the beginning, and I would always be, both of them no longer with us, sadly, both wonderful women who I will always be grateful for. You know, it's having those mentors is really vital, isn't it?
Yeah, well, mine, apart from what happened to me in England, the big mentor that I would say turned me global was Diana Vreeland, who was the editress of American Vogue.
Of course. Yeah,
because she was so powerful. I mean, she frightened me to death when I first went to New York and met. She was scary. But she was lovely and we became really good friends. But it was because of her, taking me to New York and saying this, this is the girl, this is New York, it changed my life.
Yeah, yeah. Amazing. Amazing. Wonderful. And you took that opportunity and there you go, yeah.
Scary as it was, yeah.
Yeah, it's always scary though. It's quite good to be a little bit scary, no?
It is.
I mean, you get that adrenaline going.
A lot of what happened to me was due to it was one element, but the haircut was incredibly important.
Yeah, yeah.
And you did one of the most famous haircuts on the lovely late Princess Diana, which is was it Patrick Di Mascellio?
It was Patrick. Yes, it was Patrick. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But
it
that's an iconic set of photographs and the hair and the look. Yeah. It was amazing.
Yeah.
So it was. Hair is actually so important. It changed my life. Because I think if I hadn't have had that haircut, would that have happened to me? Probably not. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's changed my life too in many ways, But of course, but I think it's not just about the haircut. It's about the zeitgeist. It's about the right time in the right place. It's all when all those elements come together and something just happens and it's all the stars are aligned and it just works. It just somehow works. But again, it'll only work if people are taking those risks,
Were you doing Diana's hair before that? Or
No.
Time you met her?
We were in Perseverance Works in Hackney Road Studios, and we were doing a few of the young royals for Vogue with Anna Harvey, with Patrick, and we didn't really know who was going to be there. And we had a few lovely young ladies, and then this sort of tall, leggy blonde comes bounding up the stairs and sticks her hand out and big smile. And I mean, she has you immediately. I mean, I'm sure you met her, Twiggy.
I didn't know her well, but we did meet, funny enough, at a Richard Avedon exhibition at the National Portrait Gallery.
Yeah.
And she was the royal there. And so I got to meet her and chat to her, and she was just so lovely.
Yeah. Well, she had that amazing, those big blue eyes, that enigmatic smile, and that she had an incredible way of disarming you straight away so that you weren't kind of put off by this royal persona, this kind of, and she was just this lovely, leggy, slowly blonde lady, and really funny, really giggly and like a little girl, really. And we had such a couple of hours taking pictures, and Patrick had her on the floor in a big ball gown, and she's kind of looking at me going, what's happening here? I said, don't worry, just go with it. It's fine. It's okay. You'll be fine. And she didn't understand a word he was saying, so I'm translating. And we kind of hit it off, and at the end of the shoot, she said, because her hair was quite big then, and I had made it, faked it into looking quite short for the shoot.
It looks amazing.
And she said, what do you think? What would you do with my hair? And I said, this was 1990, by the way.
Okay.
So we were moving from the kind of big dynasty frou-frou 80s into, which I have to say, looking back, she looked amazing there too. But I think You know what it's like with a haircut. I would never force it on someone. You have to sense when someone is ready for a change and is sending the right signals. Yeah, and she said, what would you do? And I said, I would just cut it all off and start again and kind of go for this sort of, you know, almost Linda Evangelista sort of androgynous sort slightly more masculine, less frilly, 90s kind of, because we were going into this sort of power suit era, and and we were, you know, I'd been working for Vogue for all those years, so I was immersed in that world. And she said, should we do it now? So I put a plastic bag around her and one of the garment bags around her and cut her hair off. And then I went off to Paris to do the we were shooting couture the next day in Paris with Patrick, and the phone was going crazy. The whole world had gone mad, because so I was spending most of my time in New York, so I wasn't really that aware of the power she had, or the, you know, I wasn't really in that world. And it was quite, it was quite extraordinary. And then I worked with her for 7 years after that and did lots of more iconic shoots. And also she took me to lots of incredible places, like Mother Teresa's in India and to refugee camps in, there's one particularly where we went to on the Afghan Pakistani border to this place where one of the newsreaders had set up a limb fitting center, and she was going there to bring some attention to his charity. And it was so devastatingly sad, because they had put bombs into toys so that the kids would get hurt. But she was amazing. And I never understood why she wanted me to go there with her. She said, no, you guys are coming with me. It wasn't a big team. It was very small. She did her own makeup, but she had a lot of hair and she couldn't cope with doing her own hair as well. So she took me with her and she said, but come and see what I do. And I think she just wanted us to understand what it was she did. I mean, it wasn't all film premieres
I think she did. She was
much, much more than that. Yeah. No, yeah.
I mean,
and that was, for me, I got to experience those things that most people would never get to experience. Most people in my world would never get to experience. And I will always be grateful for that, really.
Absolutely. No, it's lovely.
Because she'd be just embracing all these people. And I'd been tears around the corner, you know, thinking, oh, my God, I can't cope with this, you know, because she had that natural sort of quality that I guess nurses have and people who are naturally healing, you know.
Did you or do you only work, because when I was modelling all those years ago, if you worked for Vogue, you couldn't work for Harper's because they were like, arch enemies. Can you cross over?
Yeah, I think for a model it was different, but for us it's fine. My career has mostly been Vogue, but because they kind of dominate the fashion world, really. But in recent years, there's lots of other magazines. No, I think for hair and makeup, it's fine. You don't see us. We're just a tiny little name at the bottom of the page. Get smaller by the year.
That's so funny. Did you ever know Leonard and Vidal?
I didn't know either of them, no.
Because again, it was that 10-year difference
is quite big, isn't it? Yeah, yeah.
Because I think, well, I know Leonard trained under Vidal. I only knew Vidal vaguely. Because again, I was so young. And I think he was probably living in America then.
I know Daniel Galvin.
Oh, yeah, he did my highlights.
For Daniel, I know. I did a bit of freelance for Daniel in the 90s, yeah. And I sent Diana to Daniel too.
He's a really lovely man.
He's lovely.
Really.
And he's still working in the salon, amazingly.
I know.
He sent me a text the other day and I hadn't heard from him for ages. It was nice to hear from him.
Yeah, I worked with him we lost 3 years with 2 years with COVID, didn't we?
Yeah,
so it would be before COVID, I did a promotional thing and it was lovely and we had so much to catch up on.
Yeah.
So going forward, will you stop doing photo shoots or will you always do that?
Well, I'm not going to stop doing photo shoots because that's what I do. And I love it. And I do lots of shows now as well. I mean, we've done loads of shows over the years because suddenly I remember I did a fashion show when I worked at Molton Brown, and they had, there were eight models in the show, and we had two, maybe three hairdressers. And now, you know, doing a Chanel show, there's 100 models and 30 hairdressers, you know.
100 models?
Yeah, 100 models, one outfit each. Whereas back in the day, there'd be eight models and they had five or six changes, you know.
Yeah.
So it's everything, you know, everything is massive. Everything, every shoot is tenfold what it used to be, you know. And it's kind of sad because sometimes you're on a shoot and there's so much production and so many people, you kind of lose that spark sometimes. It just becomes a machine, you know, because sometimes I long for just the four or five or six people on a shoot and that was it, you know. But I guess things change.
That's that when I was modeling, I mean, this is late 60s, that's what it was. It was the photographer. I mean, I was lucky because I, again, all those guys you were mentioning, I didn't ever work with Patrick de Machelio, right, which I always wanted to, sadly. I never got to work with him. But I were Avedon, Bert Stern, Helmut Newton, Norman Parkinson, Barry Latigan, who took my first picture.
I have that picture. I have a print of the Barry Latigan in my hall.
The hysterical thing was that was the first professional photo taken of me, and it's probably the most famous one.
Is it, you think?
Yeah, I think. I think it's the one that most people remember.
It's the iconic one.
Is
it the one with the
Fair Isle sweater?
Fair Isle, yeah. Yes, that one.
And that was the first time I'd ever sat in front of a professional camera.
Was it?
Yeah.
Wow.
And he was so sweet, Barry, thank God, and a really brilliant. I mean, I was lucky because he took my first picture and he was a brilliant photographer.
He was an incredible
photographer. His lighting was amazing.
Incredible,
And so he just sat me on a chair and said, look into the lens and just talk to me. And I didn't do anything really. So
Patrick was a bit like that. Patrick would sit someone down, so, and a few frames. We got it. Let's move on to the next one. It wasn't a big sort of.
Well, I have a tip. You know, if you haven't got the shot in the first 15, you're not going to get it.
No, I know what you mean. I worked with Penn quite a bit when I was in New York in the 80s, and I remember there was one particular shoot with him, with Paulina Porizkova, with Polly Mellon.
Oh, Polly.
Polly, yeah, the lovely Polly. And he spent an hour or so, and then he just turned around and he went, no, this is not working for me. And Paul said, what? Nothing. And we're done. And the whole shit was finished. That was it. He didn't like the clothes. He didn't like anything at all. And it wasn't a big fuss. He was like, no, this is we're not going to do this. This is not working.
Well, it's interesting because of all the people I met in that era, and I was sent to him very early on, and he was not very nice.
Wasn't he?
And he just said, come back in 5 years when you're older.
Wow. Then, he was definitely had his thing going, yeah.
And then, so I never worked with him until we were doing My One and Only.
Right.
And they asked to do, I forget what magazine it would have been for. Probably Vogue or was he Harper's? I can't remember.
No, he was Vogue.
He was Vogue.
Yeah.
So me and Tommy, they wanted to do a picture. And it was a very peculiar shoot. He wouldn't have music on. And he kept telling me to shut my eyes. And Tommy said to him, you do realise her eyes are probably what people recognise her from. Why do you keep telling her to shut her eyes?
I did a shoot with him once. I did a shoot with him once for Vogue and with Linda Evangelista. And it was Bob Mackie dresses. And it wasn't working how we wanted it to work. So Linda was dancing in the dressing room. And I said to him, she looks really great when she's dancing. I mean, I don't know why I said that, because you didn't really say things like that to him, you know. So he took all the pictures of Linda dancing. And at the end, he turned to me and said, you've brought the devil to my studio. And I was kind of, oh, my God, what have I done? He said, I haven't done moving pictures for 30 years, but they were amazing and they printed them.
Amazing, because I think, well, it's nice to hear that he was bit strange with other people, not only.
Well, he was from a different era, wasn't he? He was quite distant. He was like a schoolmaster, wasn't he? He was quite stern and didn't really, he didn't have a lot to say.
He didn't really interact with you, did he? No. Whereas, did you ever meet, again, it's probably too early, Bert Stern, who was...
I worked with Bert Stern once. Shoots with Bert Stern. He was lovely, yeah.
Oh, he was like a big puppy dog, wasn't he?
Yeah,
I loved
Bert. Yeah, he was great.
Well, when I first went to New York in 1967, he did a documentary on my visit. So he just followed me around for three weeks.
Oh, I'd love to see that.
And, they were shown on American TV. Twiggy in New York, Twiggy in LA, and Twiggy Y. Because you can't get rid of her.
Thank God for that.
You've worked with so many amazing models and photographers. I'm not going to ask you who's your favourite, but it must
be...
Yeah.
You know, you can't have a favourite because everyone has different reasons for, you have different relationships with everyone, don't you? You know, and they come at different times in your life. And do you know what I love? I have really loved recently Instagram because I'm now in touch with models that have gone back to live in, I don't know, Midwest, and they've got kids and grandkids and years ago, we'd never have seen them again. But now, oh my God, how are you? Da, 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 da. And you kind of, because you work with a model for, I don't know, 5-6 years, however long the career is, sometimes much longer than that now. And it's really nice to reconnect with people because you do build strong relationships because you're touching each other. You're working very closely with each other. And I've really enjoyed reconnecting with lots of different people on social media. And what's been amazing recently is that there is a demand which is growing and growing for older models who are models who are in their 50s, 60s, 70s and that is just fantastic. Keep going, absolutely. Hairdressers too, hopefully, you know. I mean, there's a big market out there for that, you know, and finally, you've been doing that for a long time because you did your M&S thing quite early on before people had sort of finally admitted that older women had buying power, you know.
Well, if you think about it, most people certainly over 60 and probably over 50, their kids have grown up and so they're spending on themselves again.
Yeah, and everyone still wants to look good, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because it's different from when we were young because, I mean, you know, our mothers were probably, you know, older than their years when they were in their 40s, but it's not
absolutely
like that now.
No, I agree with you 100%, which is why... You know, I got involved in that side of the business, apart from the fact that I love it and I've always made my own clothes, mainly because in the 60s I couldn't get the clothes I wanted because I was a mod, you see, and you couldn't buy teenage clothes. They did clothes for your mum and they did clothes for kids. There was no interim.
And was that a late 60s thing when that started? Well, Bieber kind of came along, didn't it?
No, mods started in the early 60s. Barbara Hulanicki, who's one of my dearest friends, who I love to bits, she changed all that, really.
Yeah, yeah.
Because she opened this again, you were probably too young, but she opened...
I remember Bieber because my friend Lily was the PR in the big shop, you know?
Yeah,
so
the Derry and
that
Tom's.
Was one of the shops I first went to when I came to London in the mid-70s.
Wasn't it amazing?
Yeah. It was incredible. I mean, you can't, it's hard to describe to someone who'd never been there, but for the scale of it and just the detail of it is extraordinary. Do you remember those Bieber baked beans and all that with a black label? I mean, it was incredible.
I know. She's amazing. She lives in Miami now, but
we follow each other on Instagram.
Oh, do so, I love yeah, I love. Yeah, she yeah. makes me laugh probably more than anyone. She's so gorgeous. Oh, it's been so lovely chatting. We actually before we came on air, so to speak, you did remind me because I've got a brain like a sieve, a memory like a sieve, that we did work together with Nick Knight.
We did.
For Vogue. That must have been a what? 15 years ago, something like that, 10 years
well,
ago.
Well, I hate to break it to you.
Was it 25?
It was the Millennium issue, which was 23 years ago.
That is scary. that is scary.
It is, isn't it? Yeah.
That is blimey.
And I thought I was old then.
Anyway, thank you for joining me on my pod. Oh, I forgot to ask you, are you tea drinker? Because we're having tea
I'm a tea drinker, yes, in my lovely mug that Kate Moss gave me for Christmas, would you believe? William Morris mug, yeah. I'm a Yorkshire decaf. I occasionally do the caffeine, but I think it's not good for my arthritis. It's a bit inflammatory, so I like the Yorkshire decaf because it tastes exactly the same as the normal stuff.
Oh, that's good to know.
Yeah,
that's
good
to know. Well, I'm on my lemon and ginger for my throat.
Well, I've got my little bag of tea bags, and my mug travels all over the world with me because you cannot get a good cup of tea in New York or in Paris.
Tell me. In New York, they pour hot water, not boiling water, on a tea bag. It's disgusting.
Yeah, no, dishwater, disgusting. Yeah,
we need to teach them how to make tea. But
oh God, if you're in New York, down in the West Village, my friends have a lovely, lovely, tiny little English tea room called Tea and Sympathy, where all the expats congregate, and she does fantastic roast dinners. They have all the chocolate, all the scones, high tea, all that kind of stuff. So if you're in New York and you feel a bit homesick, that's the place to go. Tea and Sympathy.
Brilliant. Yeah. I shall go when I go back to New York. Anyway, thank you for joining me and good luck with the products. And I'm sure they'll be flying off.
Thank you.
Can people get them everywhere?
You can buy them on our website at sammcknight.com, or you can buy them in Space NK, soon to be in lots of other places. And on Cult Beauty too.
Okay, lovely. I wish you a very late Happy New Year.
Thank you, and the same to you, Twiggy. It was lovely to talk to you.
Lovely to chat to you.
Bye. Bye.
Oh, he's so lovely. I do remember now the shoot we did together, and it was extraordinary. And what a life. And as he said, never say no to anything. You never know what it's going to lead to. See you soon. Bye. If this is your first time listening to Tea with Twiggy, please do remember to tell your friends. You can also subscribe for free on your podcast app and listen to all my previous guests. If you want to connect with me, I'd love to hear from you. You can find me on Twitter at Twiggy, or you can find me on Instagram at Twiggy Lawson. My thanks go to all the people that have helped this podcast happen. Many thanks to James Carroll and all the team at North Bank Talent Management. Thanks to all the team at Stripped Media, including Ben Williams, who edits the show, my producer Kobe Omanaka, and executive producers Tom Wally and Dave Corkery. The music you can hear now is my version of Waterloo Sunset by The Kinks. If you'd like to hear the whole song, you can find it and all the other songs I've recorded on iTunes and Spotify. So check it out. I look forward to you joining me for my next episode. So see you then. Bye.
Just heard a Stripped Media production.